The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report, hockey playoffs. Grantland's Katie Baker joining me in the Grantland studio. What's happening?
Hey there. Happy to be here.
Are you nervous?
I'm very nervous.
Stop. At least the cameras aren't on.
Yeah, you should see me with my stats printed out around me here.
Yeah, you have like, I don't know what's going on. You're like beautiful mind with all these paper things. You've been writing the cold-hearted hockey column for us. Pretty good. I was proud of year one. I'm excited for the playoff edition. Are you going to expand it to two times a week?
You did say something menacing to me on the phone the other day. I don't know how you meant it, but you said, this is the playoffs for you also.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just hoping not to choke here.
You don't want to end up like the Capitals. All right. So we have Greg Wyshynski from Yahoo coming up a little bit later. We have my buddy House to talk Caps Bruins because Lord knows America is on the edge of their seats for that one. But right now from ESPN, the guy who during hockey's dark years was really the lone voice on the network other than Barry Melrose pushing hockey, talking about hockey, writing about hockey. And now hockey is I don't want to say it's popular again, but it definitely has more momentum than it's had since when. When was the last time hockey had this much momentum?
I got to say, in the heyday of the late 90s.
94? You'd go later than 94?
Well, there's those you know, the 97-ish through 99 with, you know, the Flyers. And, you know, 94, obviously, for me as a Rangers fan. But, you know, that whole golden or glowing puck era,
ooh,
I think, was when it was really in the national consciousness.
The glowing puck era. let's get Bucci on the phone right now. What's happening?
Well, it's that time of year. Barry Melrose comes out of his Glens Falls, New York cave and starts to earn his gigantic paycheck at ESPN.
I asked Katie this, I'm going to ask you this. When was the last time you remember the hockey playoffs, from a mainstream standpoint, getting as much attention as it feels like it's getting this week?
That's a good question. I don't really know. It seems kind of the same to me, but you know, I pay attention. I watch every game from the start of the season. Maybe it's the new network, the fledgling cable network that's trying to get traction and pushing it out there more. But it feels good.
I think 24/7 helped. Yep. I think just the Crosby soap opera, is he back, is he not back, that whole thing kind of helped. The Rangers being good again, that's helped. The young stars. What else? What am I missing, Katie?
Well, I know that the NHL's big rallying cry this year is they want the Stanley Cup playoffs to be the equivalent of March Madness. So that's why they've really branded it around the cup. If you look at all the ads and everything, they're going to have like a, I don't know, 50-foot high Stanley Cup in the middle of Times Square tomorrow. So, you know, I think the marketing and hopefully
the cup is a good one. It is like, no other sport has a trophy that comes close to the cup. I almost feel like basketball should just steal it. I would just take it because in like 20 years from now, you wouldn't even know, like, you didn't even remember who had it first. But Bucci, who are you looking at? Like, who's your favorite right now?
My favorite are the Penguins. If you go back through Stanley Cup history, the consistent component for Stanley Cup champions are people who can score goals. Since the lockout, you have to be a top 10 goal scoring team. You go back the last 30 years, the last 25, 30 years, the key is to score goals. There have been some exceptions. Two of the three Devils teams, as we know, were well below par offensive teams. Their other cup, though, they were the second best scoring team in the league. But every other team, you're a top 10 goal scoring team. So if you look at the top 10 goal scoring teams this year, it would tell you that either Pittsburgh, Boston, Philly, Ottawa, Vancouver, Chicago, Detroit, or Nashville will win the cup. that's probably going to happen. Now, there are exceptions, like I said, and so maybe a team like the Rangers or St. Louis can do it, being a well below average goal scoring team, but the odds are one of those teams will win the Cup.
Now, do you feel like Vegas agrees with you? Pittsburgh is plus 350 to win the Stanley Cup, so basically 7-2 odds.
They led the league in goals this year.
Right. The Crosby thing, though, what is he? How many games has he played since he came back? Like, what was it, 14, 15?
Yeah, 22 total this year, I believe.
Right. Now, you know, who knows? Like, one elbow, and that's it. He's out, and he's playing a team that they have more bad blood with than anybody. Like, if you're the Flyers, don't you just – do you target him? Like, how far can you go to try to push him around?
Well, his vision's so good, and he knows where people are. And now that I think his vision will be extra good, I mean, he is so far and away the best player in the league. You know, 37 points this year in 22 games. I mean, his points per game just dwarfs everybody else, and Malkin's dwarfs everybody else after that.
Right.
So, I mean, you put those two guys in there, they're by far the strongest team in the league. But I think Crosby, I think a lot of it was conservative healing. I think the neck situation, when that popped up, that was really weird, that all this time he had a neck injury, and maybe that was part of the issue. And I think he's going to figure out how to play, but, you know, he has to prove that he can be patient, not get involved in those scrums. But I think he'll be okay in terms of preventing himself from getting injured. But, hey, you never know. I mean, it's no hockey like this, and it will be a test for sure, and this series will be a huge test.
Sometimes when you have these series and everybody talks about how much bad blood there is and, oh, my God, teams are going to kill each other, and then it never actually happens. How sold are you on a scale of 1 to 10 on the bad blood situation between the Penguins and the Flyers?
I got about 8.4. I think
8.4?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty safe bet that Scott Hartnell enjoys doing things to entertain people, and the Penguins certainly will stick up for each other. They have a lot of people up and down the lineup. So, yeah, I think you're pretty safe. You're going to see stuff happen at the end of games where the outcome's already determined, and some stuff during the middle. But, yeah, for the most part, you're worried about scoring first and winning game one. But game one usually, you know, in this era, will start out, like you said, not quite crazy yet.
I think that there should be an over-under set on the number of times someone says the word gutless or classless during the series in a post-game interview.
I don't get the gutless word. I don't understand how people go to that so much. What does that mean? Gutless. I actually think it takes guts if you put your life on the line like that.
Well, that was probably the highlight of the season, right? The sideline, or what do they call it in hockey? You're not sideline reporter. What are you? Side
between
ice?
The glass.
Between the glass.
The glass.
The poor guy stayed in there as the coaches were yelling at each other. Just, he looked like the kid at the diner whose parents are screaming at each other. And just, he was horrified. That was great. I love that. You just don't get that in other sports. And especially, like, as a basketball fan, you look at each other cross-eyed in basketball. It's a double technical, you know, and nobody can ever settle their business. And I think that's why I've been enjoying watching so much hockey this year. Like, teams take care of business.
Yeah, football had the Harbaugh-Schwartz thing, which was very rare, and it was what a big deal that was. Like you said, we have that in hockey. We've had a lot of history going throughout the years of that happening.
Yeah, even like I went to the Kings-Sharks game on Thursday, which was a really good game. It ended up the Sharks won in a shootout, but Clifford on the Kings boarded somebody and got the 5-minute boarding in the first period, and the guy was hurt, skated off. And you just knew in the second period, like, somebody was going to come at him on the Sharks because that's hockey. That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Katie, you're a Rangers fan. Penguins, Flyers, who do you hate more in this series?
You know, it's tough because I grew up hating the Flyers more than anyone else, but I love Claude Giroux so much that I secretly enjoy watching Flyers games this year. I think I'd rather the Rangers, you know, let's not assume that they'll make it to face either team, but they do play better against the Flyers than the Penguins, I think. And so I'd rather see the Penguins get knocked out than the Flyers, as sacrilegious as that feels to say.
Mm. Bucci, I know your answer. You're a Bruins fan.
I love all 30 teams equally. You know that, Bill.
Stop it.
Since I became host of the Emmy-nominated NHL Tonight in 1998.
Stop it. There's only one team in this matchup that crippled Cam Neely. And that's all I have to say about that. I will always hate the Penguins. Even when I stopped watching hockey, I still hated the Penguins. Just even telepathically, knowing what was going on with them. So give me your – you like the Pens in the East – How about the West?
Like I said, if you can score goals, you're dangerous. Now, this could be one of those years because the NHL clearly is letting more stuff go. Scoring continues to plummet. It's gone down every year since the lockout when we kind of rebooted the sport. Now we're back to allowing a little bit of tugs, a little bit of hooks, a little bit of holds. And if that's going to be the case, then you look at the teams who are great at preventing goals, and that's, you know, St. Louis and the Rangers and Vancouver and Boston. And like I said, then you start to intersect. You get to those teams who do both, Boston, Detroit, Vancouver. Those are your big three, teams who can do both, score a lot and prevent. So, you know, those, now your cup kind of looks between those three. And then to answer your Western Conference question, again, that's where Vancouver is such a strong team because they can do both. And I would have them. I would have Vancouver as my favorite to repeat as Western Conference champion.
Vegas agrees to you. They are 5-1. The Blues are 8-1. If you dip down here into the 20-1 range, the San Jose Sharks. Why couldn't they be a sleeper?
I just think they're toast. I think their time has come. I think the expiration date. I think that banana is bruised and black now. And they certainly have stuff. You know, they got Joe Pavelski and Logan Couture, the guy you mentioned who was bored in the L.A. game. And they have some goalie. Antti Niemi's won a cup. So and Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau could go crazy. But I just don't see them. And they finished strong. They won their last four. But I just don't know. I think their time has passed.
What about the team that is a one or a two seed? And we know in hockey, the one and the two seeds can somehow get shocked in round one. Who is the most likely candidate to get sucker punched?
In both conferences?
Either. Give me one.
LA was my preseason Western Conference champion pick, but I look at their goal totals and it's they're the only team who didn't break 200 goals this year. They had such a hard time scoring goals. I just don't know if they can do it. Jonathan Quick, that reason alone, he maybe should win the Vezina, although I got Henrik Lundqvist winning it. But I root for my prediction. That's what I root for. That's one of my predictions, so I'm rooting for the Kings. But it's so difficult. You know, the Rangers play Ottawa, a team who can score a lot. The Bruins play a Capital team. I know some of Bruins Nation is afraid of Washington. I don't think they should be. And St. Louis is a bit of an issue because, like I said, they can't score goals either. So we play overtime games. You can't accumulate these points. And that's why goal scoring is so important, I think, throughout the years, because we play overtime, and eventually we have to have a winner, and usually it's going to be the team that can score. It's better at scoring goals. And so that's what usually happens.
I think St. Louis, just having – I saw more Western teams than Eastern teams could just having King season tickets. St. Louis, to me, it's hard for me to believe they're a two-seat, just from what I witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't – sometimes, like when the Penguins showed up, it was just clear they were good. Like, you could just sit there in your seat and go, all right, that guy's really good, and this guy's good. And the Blues, to me, I didn't totally see it. I'm not sure exactly – what was I missing with the Blues?
Well, yeah, they're just a total defensive team. Ken Hitchcock, they got him in the middle of the year, which is probably a good thing. You know, like you said, they don't have a lot of offensive flair. I mean, their leading goal scorer was their best defensive centerman, David Backes. You know, other than that, there's just a lot of, you know, 15 to 20 goal scorers. David Perron was one of those concussion guys who missed a whole year, and he's probably their best offensive player over 82 games. And, you know, he could get hot, and Chris Stewart has had a down year. He only had 15 goals. He could get hot. He's like their Cam Neely, 21st century Cam Neely, fights and score goals and skates around, hits people. So there's enough. Again, there's stuff there. A lot of teams have stuff. You just don't know how it's gonna play out in the playoffs. But the Blues certainly, in my mind, do have enough stuff and a couple goalies that they could get through. But again, they're gonna have to score some goals eventually. David Backes led them in scoring. Him and T.J. Oshie had 54 points that led their team in scoring.
Katie, who do you think is the upset favorite to get knocked out, toppled?
I mean, I don't know. I was nervous to be facing Washington potentially as a Rangers fan, but they've got, I think, both their one and two goalies are injured, and they've got their number three guy starting. So he either could, you know, as you were asking me yesterday, Bill, about who's going to be this year's hot goalie of the playoffs.
Oh yeah,
you know. Maybe it'll be Braden Holtby, and maybe it won't. But I wouldn't want to I don't necessarily think the Bruins are in danger of getting toppled by the Caps, but I think it could be a long series. You know, if Ovechkin is, you know, plays the way he has kind of over, you know, the last month or so, you know, for all the talk on Ovechkin not living up to himself this season, I think he finished with more goals than he did last year. And, you know, I was happy to avoid that team, but, yeah, I mean, St. Louis, it's also a question of whether their goalies will play the way they did all year. You know, Halak made that big run with Montreal a couple of years ago, so he's, you know, proven that he can do that. But, you know, the Blues and the Rangers are actually the two teams that have the least playoff experience of all the playoff teams this year.
Oh, yeah, you had that weird, you had the sheet. And the Rangers, their playoff game experience was not great.
Yeah, they have the least total playoff games of any of the teams. They have six guys who have played more than 30 playoff games compared with, like, Detroit has 15, Boston has 15, San Jose has 14. You know, I think they still have leadership there. You know, they have Brad Richards, who won the Conn Smythe in 04, but, you know, that it does matter, I think, being able to play in that environment and go deep. And it becomes a different game in the playoffs than the regular season. So that said, the Rangers have played a form of playoff hockey for a lot of the season. You know, they block shots. They throw their bodies around. They're tough. So, you know, I don't think they'll necessarily wilt as long as, you know, Marian Gabrick can keep scoring goals the way he has this year.
That goalie talk is a great point about, you know, who's going to play hot. Who's going to be Tim Thomas? Who's going to be Dwayne Roloson?
Yep.
Edmonton almost won because, like I said, as the league gets tighter, it's all about goal prevention. And who is that goalie going to be? Because that's one of the cool things is that he can carry a team.
Right.
And that's why, whether it's like, I look at, and I'm trying, I go down these teams, it's like, who is that guy? Okay, well, yeah, it could be him, but you look at like Pekka Rinne in Nashville. He could go nuts.
Yeah.
And they're good enough where they could win the cup. Nashville could have the Stanley Cup, you know, this summer going, we're going downtown there. And that's where Henrik Lundqvist's issue is. I did an ESPN top 100 current hockey players list this year. It was a lot of fun. I knew it would get feedback, and it did. And I had Lundqvist not quite as high as some Ranger fans thought. And my issue with him is he's yet to step up in the playoffs, really. And like I said, you don't win cups with good goaltending. You win with great goaltending. Tim Thomas's numbers got better in the playoffs. Your numbers have to get better. And Lundqvist's and Pekka Rinne, I mentioned him, their numbers have gotten a little bit worse in the postseason. They have to get better for your team to win the Stanley Cup. So that's a great way to look at it. What goalie could get better than his good numbers during the regular season?
He had, I think, almost better than good numbers in the regular season, but I'm very interested to see the play of Mike Smith in the postseason for the Phoenix Coyotes, because that's been a story where, you know, Ilya Bryzgalov left Phoenix. Everyone left them for dead. And Mike Smith came in. He was, you know, the backup in Tampa and has just really been strong for them, and is one of the big reasons that, you know, they won their division, number three, and so I think he's somewhat of a potential playoff, you know, hot goalie, but, you know, we'll see.
I would have said Quick, but he really fell apart like the last week or so, and, you know, they should have had the three seed. He was terrible against San Jose. In the game, they gave up five goals. It really felt like the Kings were sleepery, you know, and then Carter got hurt, and then Quick, whatever happened to him happened, and now I don't feel like they're that sleeper anymore. You mentioned the Rangers goalie, Lundqvist, who Brian Gumbel was swooning over on that Real Sports segment. I've never seen him just so over the moon over another human being, ever.
I don't know, Bill, though, like, if he was in this room, you know,
I'd probably
how do
be
you
swooning?
Think he'd react?
Yeah.
Do you think you'd be more or less nervous than when you sat across from President Obama?
I'd be more nervous, I think. I was swooning watching Brian Gumbel swoon over Henrik Lundqvist. But he's older than I thought. Isn't he, like, 30 or 31, something like that?
30.
Like,
yeah, he turns 30 in June, I believe.
Yeah, so he's had at least, you know, maybe there is something to the whole regular season goalie versus postseason thing. My dad, diehard Bruins fan, who never gave up on the team even during the lockout and all that stuff, his biggest fear is any sort of Tim Thomas injury because he said his heart cannot take whoever the backup. Who is the backup for the Bruins? Because Rask is out, right?
Yeah, they hired. Listen to me. They signed some dude. I think he's Swedish. I never heard. It wasn't even his first win. He apparently had another win in his career, but because they had Marty Turco for a while.
But he was a rental because they can't keep him for the playoffs.
Right. This guy named Anton Khudobin.
I never
heard of him. You know, he's actually Russian. He's a 25-year-old Russian. So
maybe he'll be the hot goalie.
Well, my dad is like secretly frightened that one of these teams is just going to repeatedly send somebody flying toward the net at Thomas and try to.
Maybe.
Did you see, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, someone asked as innocuous a question of Thomas as you could about the White House mess, which was, you know, now that you're going to be playing in D.C., is this going to be a distraction? And he. Interview was over. Scrum was over.
Oh God!
So you know we could that could ratchet up a little bit.
It is funny you brought up Henrik Lundqvist, and you know it's amazing how the goaltender image have changed.
Yeah,
I mean, he's like a dreamy Swede who wears skinny ties. And when we were growing up, Bill, we had Gump Worsley and Jerry Cheever.
Yeah, Dumpy.
Those were our male model goaltenders that we had.
Goalies are supposed to be dumpy. That's what I grew up. Yeah. That's why Tim Thomas kind of fits the mold of just like. He just seems like he should just be hanging out in a sweatshirt at all times.
But now they're ripped. They're like 185 pounds. They're the best athletes on the team. They can put their feet behind their heads. They can, you know, go in the balance beam. And because it's such a, you know, the position is now all about flexibility and lateral movement. No position, I think, has changed in sports in the last 25 years in the goalie, who's gone from, like I said, Jerry Cheevers, Gump Worsley. I'm not going to get in front of that slap shot. The Henrik Lundqvist, Roberto Luongo, and his dirty salad, and the rest of them. It's just a whole different position.
And I got to say, sitting behind the net for a whole season, it was. I guess I never really thought about the job that much. First of all, I don't know how you're normal when you have that job. It's just not a normal way to spend 82, or they end up playing like 60, 65, but. Holy mackerel. Like, you're on the front line of a war, basically. They're just things getting fired at you nonstop. And not just that, but the guys that are constantly running into you and banging into you. It's just, that is not an easy job. And I'm amazed, like, as you said, how flexible they are. But also, like, they all have their little weird OCD routines. They have to tap the stick. They have to drink, like, the three things of water. Like, I think you have to be kind of a weirdo to do that job.
It's like a place kicker. It certainly is. But at least now the equipment's good. Back in the day, the equipment was terrible. The mask was pasted against your face. And so the guys never practiced because they didn't want to get hurt. So that's why the goalies are so much better now, because the goalies never practiced before because their equipment was terrible. They weren't going to get in front of an helmet, get a slap shot in practice. You kidding me? So they could never really work on things, and so they didn't really train a lot. And once the equipment got better and the fear factor went away, then they could really make it, a science and really get in shape. And of course, then the money became huge. And now here we are, you know, the goals, you know, we have two guys who scored 50 goals. And that's why I've always said we should make the net bigger. Just like in baseball, they lowered the mound in the late 60s when Yaz won a batting title hitting 301. Then I think the same thing with hockey. The goalies are too good. They're like the offense in baseball in the late 60s. The goalies are too good. They're too flexible. The equipment's a little bit bigger. And I think we need a little more 7-5 games instead of 2-1 games.
Do you think they would ever actually make the goalies wear smaller equipment?
I worry about liability issues.
Yeah.
And people getting sued. So that's why people always say, just make the equipment smaller. I said, that's not going to happen. That's too late for that.
Well, the other thing I've noticed is that, you know, just watching like I had never really thrown myself in a regular season since they had the shootout. I can't believe how many goalies just stop the shootouts. Like, you always thought, like, you know, when you're just watching the course of any hockey game and somebody gets a breakaway, you think the guy's going to score.
Right.
And you're surprised when the goalie stops him. And yet, when you watch these shootouts, it's like the goalie just seems to have a significant advantage. And if anything, like, it's really hard to beat a goalie with a conventional move. Any puck they can see, they're usually going to be able to stop it, catch it, deflect it, whatever. And, you know, it does make me think, like, maybe you do make the goal just a tiny bit bigger. I don't know. I wouldn't make it much bigger, but maybe it could be, like, a 6 inches wider.
Not even that. Just an inch. Like you real, all you need is, like, an inch higher and an inch wider. That's really all you need. Then all those goals we hear, all those shots we see hit the pipes, and how many we hear those? They're now goals. It's like I said, you wouldn't even need 6 inches or that much. All you need is like an inch wider and an inch higher, and it'll make a big difference. But yeah, because goalies have actually always done pretty well on penalty shots before we had the shootout. But yeah, there's guys this year who are unbelievable. Varmalov in Colorado saw 24 shootouts. He let 2 goals in out of 24.
Wow.
You know? And Marc-Andre Fleury was great, and Jimmy Howard was great. And it's a huge advantage. And I think, you know, one reason why the NFL exploded, there's many. I mean, you know, the gambling, the fantasy league. But also they always make sure the offense has a little bit of an advantage.
Yeah.
And I think that's important in the entertainment business.
I think if they ever did make the goal wider, which knowing the NHL and their propensity to enact rules changes would probably take another decade, but
yeah,
I propose we call it the Gordon Bombay rules change, you know, a couple inches to the left.
I can tell you that just with the shootouts and the Kings, huge advantage not to have shootouts anymore for the Kings. They might have been the most inept shootout team I've ever seen. Like, San Jose had basically 3 seed on the line. The guy gloved one of the shots.
Yeah.
You can't glove a shootout shot. It's embarrassing. It's like
Quick was not good this year in shootouts. He was only 56%.
So I think for sudden death, that might actually help them. We got to talk about the Bruins.
Yeah.
I thought the Bruins, when everybody was healthy for that 6 or 7 week stretch after they had the little Stanley Cup hangover, and then all of a sudden they started playing well. Seriously, that was the best I've ever seen a Bruins team play.
You accused me of jinxing them.
Yeah, and then Katie Bakes jinxed them, and I think she congratulated them on winning the 2012 Cup or whatever you did. You worked your little feminine wiles, and immediately things fell apart. Tim Thomas went to the White House. Nathan Horton got a concussion. How are you feeling about the Bruins heading into the playoffs?
I'm feeling scale 1 to 10, again, 10 being the most optimistic, probably like a 7. Like you said, the Nathan Horton concussion, that bully line of him and Lucic was really a strong line to really set the tone in these playoffs. And sometimes Horton would come and go offensively, but he could always take the body. And that kind of set their depth really good. I mean, you knew Tyler Seguin was going to step up anyway and be a top 6 forward from last year. And, you know, he led them to scoring at age 19. His upside is huge. But, you know, again, I just worry a little about Thomas. He just seems to be a little bit off. Like I said, his numbers last year were just off the charts, and that's what it takes to win Stanley Cups. He was just otherworldly, and he's going to have to, you know, probably going to have to repeat that again this year. Maybe not as much because they do have a little more offensive game because of Sagan. But, again, they can score and they can prevent, and that's that's the old Detroit Red Wings when they were in it every year formula that you have to have. But, again, it comes down to Thomas. I mean, last year, a .940 save percentage in the playoffs and a 1.98 goals against. That's what it comes down to. The goalie that plays like that is going to win. So it starts with him and then, you know, and works out from there.
You know who doesn't fear the Bruins? Katie Bakes.
Well, you know, I was going to say – did I just lose my
– No, I don't think so.
I was going to say if the Washington Capitals do what they did near the end of the season when they could barely – you know, they'd get a lead and they would – kind of sit back and you know, if they do that against the Bruins, that's what the Bruins are best at, is if you try to sit back like that, they're just going to attack you. You're going to score, you know, 3 goals in 2 minutes, and it's going to be a totally different game. So I think it'll depend on if the Caps can actually, you know, push when they've got leads and not, you know, play not to lose. And you know, they've kind of been playing some version of playoff hockey for a while now, trying to just make the playoffs. So you know, that it kind of, I guess it goes either way on whether that helps them or what, you know, or whether that it's going to be too much and they're not going to have the goaltending. And I don't know. I just didn't want to have to play that team in the first round. So.
And how about your boy Chris Kreider signing with the Rangers, Katie Bates?
Did he sign yet?
Yeah.
When? Must have been when I was like walking over here.
He's going to be at practice tomorrow, and he can play in the playoffs. So
there
go. Boston College Eagle. Yeah. Mojo.
Oh, she's so happy. You should see her right now.
But here's
I knew it would light her up.
But it's just, like, I see. Here's the thing with Kreider. Like, can you imagine John Tortorella? Like, he I don't know. I just imagine him saying, what, I got to take this college kid that hasn't been with the team all year? And
but he's a fellow, you know, at least he's coming from Boston. So
true.
That might help.
Yeah, well, wow, I was starting to think that that wasn't going to happen. I was hearing all these conspiracy theories, so.
I'm surprised it didn't happen the night they won.
I know.
Other guys were signing their team loss, and boom, they were out. I don't know why it took 2-3 days.
Yeah, Jeremy Welsh from Union College was like, you
know. 2 hours later.
We barely had time to interview him after the game before he was on his way to join up with the Hurricanes. Who, by the way, bold prediction for next season, Carolina Hurricanes are going to have a big bounce back.
I like that pick, too. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Carolina Hurricanes.
You know, they had...
Just stop it.
They've got such good youth. You know, they've got a good goalie. It's not like they're one of those teams that is going to spend their offseason trying to fight for Corey Schneider or something like that. You know, they've got Cam Ward, and they just... I feel good things about that organization.
They stole the Whalers.
They did. And do you know the Whalers, by the way? I think, I don't remember the stat. This sounds like something that you might know, Bucci, but like they're like in the top 10 of team merchandise logo, you know, sales.
The Whalers are?
Yeah, they are. Well, they kind of reentered. I think there was a licensing issue until last year. They really weren't allowed to make stuff, or people weren't allowed to make stuff, and all of a sudden they relaunched. And so since then, they're just, it's everywhere. Because it's all brand new stuff, and people are plucking it up.
I got to say, it's kind of a shame that Hartford, that they had to leave for a variety of reasons. But the ESPN component of that could have been really interesting. You know, you think about, like, ESPN potentially could have bought the Whalers and just made them, like, the ESPN hockey team.
It'd be like the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, the Hartford.
They already bought the Ducks. You know, Disney bought the Ducks once.
Yeah. But it would have been interesting to have a team like that close to ESPN. I feel like ESPN, think of how many employees ESPN has. They could have taken the Whale under their wing.
They could have.
And ESPN's a very successful corporation. That could have worked.
Yeah.
All right, so your prediction is Penguins. I mean, you basically went chalk on us. You picked the Penguins and the Canucks.
Well, no, that's the two teams I would look at. But if I had to pick two teams, I'm going to go Nashville Penguins.
Whoa! All right, that's a real pick now.
Yeah.
Predators, 15-1 for anyone scoring at home.
That's a good number. I would jump on that.
So you like this the Russian guy who randomly showed up with like 20 games to go in this season?
Yeah,
you,
Alexander Redolov.
You think this guy's a potential, pushes the envelope a little bit?
He's the real deal, and they got good character, and they got excellent coaching, they got good defense, they got a goalie, they've got to score a little bit. They can score a little bit, and they have that goalie, like I said. Great goaltending, increase your regular season numbers, you got a shot.
Well, nothing would light up the Nielsen ratings quite like Nashville in the finals, so we'll keep an eye on that. Bucci, anything to plug?
I got a new video blog coming out this week, and other than that, no.
All right. We'll see you on NHL. I'm sure you're growing your playoff beard as we speak. I might actually grow a playoff beard. I'm thinking about it.
Are you going to grow in for the Kings or the Bruins?
The beard-a-thon?
Or I think Bruins. Whoever goes longer.
Bruins.
Yeah.
Yeah. My heart's with the Bruins.
Yeah.
But I will say that I felt like I had a lot at stake in that San Jose game last week because as a season ticket holder, you want the game 7.
Right.
I was really rooted for the game 7. And then, of course, they lost the shootout. But anyway. All right. John Buchgas, thank you.
Peace out.
All right. Now we're going to call Wyshynski. All right, let's move over to the Puck Daddy himself from Yahoo, Greg Wyshynski, on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline right now. You missed it. John Buchgras came on before you and broke the news to Katie Biggs that Chris Kreider had signed with the Rangers, and she actually, like, did some weird move, like, with her body. Like, it knocked her spine out for a second. She almost collapsed.
I was electrified.
It was very exciting. It was probably one of the most exciting BS Report moments we've ever had. How do you feel about that addition to the Rangers?
Well, as you know, I'm not a Rangers fan, Bill.
I know.
I'm actually a New Jersey Devils fan.
I'm
so I imagine
aware.
For someone who hasn't tasted the victory of a Stanley Cup since all the way back in 1994, and then before that, all the way back in 1940, I imagine this news is very exciting.
Oh, wow, some Rangers-Devils.
Well, not Rangers-Devils. As Wish knows from back in the message boards days, it's the Rags and the Debbies. Rags with a dollar sign.
Well, back in the message board days, what does that mean?
Well, you see, Katie and I both actually cut our blogging teeth back in the newsgroup era of fan criticism and fan interaction on the internet. Mm. She's written about it on Deadspin. Yeah,
yes.
Those were the chaotic days of Rangers fans and Devils fans and Flyers fans all trying to say terrible things about each other and then believing it would never again appear on the internet after it's been said. It was a naive time, really.
And now we just say terrible things about each other anyway on the internet.
Exactly. Bill, the way things stack up, if things go according to plan in the Eastern Conference and the Devils beat the Panthers and all of the higher seeds hold serve, why, it'd be the Rangers and Devils in the Stanley Cup Eastern Conference semifinals.
Wow. Now, when was the last time that's happened?
I'm going to say it's the series. You know what it was? It was the series where Avery waved his stick in front of Brodeur's face.
Huh.
And they did that thing. They didn't know. They had to invent the rule on the fly that you weren't allowed to do that. I think that was the last time that the two teams played.
R.I.P. Sean Avery.
Poor Sean Avery.
I liked the there was a New York Times article about Lundqvist this weekend where it said that Sean Avery has picked out most of his multiple clothes, and I wonder if he's still going to be doing that during the playoffs.
So he went from being one of the preeminent pests in the National Hockey League to being the Rangers goalie's wife's fashion consultant.
Not since Dennis Rodman have we seen an athlete fall this quickly upon leaving the league. How are you? Are you sold on the Rangers? Like, is this a regular season team? What's your take?
I'm a little concerned about them offensively. I think the undoing for the Rangers in previous postseasons has been an inability to get that one goal that they've needed. Mostly against the Capitals, but that one goal that they've needed to give Lundqvist the offensive support. Like, he's always money. He always comes through. You don't worry about him. You worry about them offensively. And I guess the other concern about this series for them against Ottawa in the first round is Ottawa's got a lot of speed. They're a little spunky team. They could be tough to defend with some of their offensive players. And then they also have some goaltending, too. I mean, Craig Anderson's a dude who had that ridiculous game for Colorado a few years back where he stopped, like, 50 shots and was crazy good. So it's not the easiest of first-round matchups for the Rangers. I think they actually probably would have preferred to play the Capitals. They know them a little bit better, and the Caps are, I think, right for the picking. So it'll be more of a challenging first-rounder than people think.
We need to pause and just give props to the Senators. I think every sports writer in the nation had them picked to finish, 15th in the conference, and here they are in the playoffs. So for that alone... I was not expecting that.
I will only give props to the Senators if their fans do the right thing, which is to forego the playoff beard and grow the playoff bushy mustache like their coach Paul McLean. It's the only thing that should happen in Ottawa this year is if your coach has a gigantic duster on his face, you should follow suit and grow one yourself for the playoffs.
That's an interesting move. Like, instead of doing the cliched playoff beard, go with a cliched playoff something else,
exactly.
Or non-cliched, I should say.
Exactly, and I mean we did receive some sad news today from the playoff follicle front, which is that it seems as if Patrick Kane will forego both the playoff mullet and the super cool DJ Jazzy Jeff lines on the side of his head that he had last year. He has decided to forego all of this because the Blackhawks did not find success with that look. So I don't know if that means he's going to go with something different. Maybe he'll do the Gumby this year. I don't know. But, there will be no party in the back this year for Patrick Kane.
I want to see a team do the horrible college hockey bleach your hair bright yellow one of these years.
I don't remember that happening before.
Minnesota did it. I think Minnesota Duluth did it the year before where their hair turned that horrible. It's like the color of the shirt Bill's wearing right now.
Yeah.
And I thought about, like, if I were their mother, I would be so angry that all these championship photos are being taken with their sons looking like criminals.
So
essentially what you're saying is you want the LA Kings to do that.
Right, they've already got Jeff Carter.
Yeah, that'd be the team with Jeff Carter. Right?
The last thing they need is to be more soft than the Kings.
Dustin Penner would look pretty good.
Yeah. So Rangers Devils and Bruins Penguins looming as our round two series. I mean, that looks so good on paper that makes me think somebody is going to screw that up. So who is the most likely candidate to screw that up?
Ooh, good question. I guess the most likely candidate would have to be Pittsburgh just by the nature of how competitive that series could be. I have them winning in six, But it's going to be such a bloodbath. I mean, it's a throwback to the glory years of the Patrick Division. I mean, two teams that just despise each other. The players despise each other, and the coaches despise each other. I'm hoping there'll be fights in the press box. I mean, it's one of those beautiful throwback series. And when you get into that chaotic thing of two teams that just have general animosity for each other, it kind of makes the whole thing a little bit unpredictable. I mean, I think Pittsburgh's clearly the better team. I think if Philly was healthier on D, that it might be a different kind of series. But when you have this aspect of hate, and when you've got guys on Philly's side like Scotty Hartnell and players like that that are going to be doing every extracurricular thing after the whistle that they can to get the Penguins off their game, it really does kind of throw it in a little bit of chaos. I like the Bruins against the Caps. I think of the three teams, the Caps could have played the Rangers, the Devils, and the Bruins. I think this is the worst matchup for them because not only can the Bees throw out Chara and Seidenberg against the Ovechkin line, they can also throw out Patrice Bergeron's line against them too. And considering that Ovechkin's line doesn't exactly play a lick of defense, at times at least, or so it would seem, I think they're going to be able to counterpunch the Caps pretty good as well. So to me, it could be a long series, but I think it's a series where we'll see the Bruins come out.
What do you think, Katie Biggs?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it just comes down to whether the Caps will, like I was saying earlier, whether they'll do the thing where they sit back on a 2-0 lead, and if they do that, Bruins are going to walk all over them.
Is it all right that I'm not afraid of the Caps just solely because of their playoff history? I feel like that stuff matters, man. You bring baggage into the playoffs, and even the Caps fans think that they're going to just fall apart.
Although, you know, it could work the other way this year, which is that they go in without any pressure. I mean, it seems like towards the end of the season, yeah, they're trying to make the playoffs and stuff, but there's no expectation of, oh, we're finishing first, we're the big dog on the block. It's almost like a shared DNA between them and the San Jose Sharks in that aspect.
Right. The Sharks you picked before the season to win the Cup of Stanley.
Now, I was really hoping that maybe that had been forgotten, or maybe that episode had been deleted.
Katie Biggs told me to bring it up during the podcast.
Like the message boards, you know, it never goes away, Wish.
But wait a second,
really
though.
Yeah, I picked the Sharks to come out of the West, and I've just been massively disappointed. I mean, even at the end of the year where I thought they stacked up and did pretty well against the Kings, they're just a team. They remind me of an old rock band that's still trying to remember what the chords are. You know what I mean? It's like they seem like they look like the Sharks and they smell like the Sharks and you know the names, but they just don't look like a team that's all that engaged in trying to win a Stanley Cup. And I find that kind of shocking. I really thought this was going to be the year where they break through, having been the bridesmaid in the Western Conference this past year.
Sometimes they feel to me like a team full of, you know, quote, glue guys that doesn't have a glue guy. It's, you know, you've guys like Joe Thornton on the team, and they just don't have that cohesive feel. I moved to San Francisco, and I was all excited to watch all these Sharks games, and they didn't grab me very much this season. And I haven't been able to put my finger on what exactly it is. I love Logan Couture, and I don't know. I don't know. I just, all season long, it's just, they've, you know, Todd McClellan's been kind of under the gun, and what's Doug Wilson going to do, and they, I don't know, but that said, that could be exactly the reason why they come on and play St. Louis, and they have more playoff experience, you know, if we're going to say that that's a big indicator.
Yeah, it's a tricky series. I mean, in two aspects, the first being that, you know, the playoff experience thing with the Blues is tricky because, like, on the one hand, you got so many young players. On the other hand, you got Hitchcock behind the bench. You got Langenbrunner and Arnett. You've got Backes with the Olympic experience. You've got some guys that have been around the block a little bit, but they're not the Sharks. I mean, the Sharks played for a conference title last year. You got some real veteran guys in that team. And you almost feel like there's a teacher mastering the student kind of aspect of the series. When you look on paper and see how much experience is on one side and how little of it is on the other side as far as the playoffs go. And the other thing is the scoring. I mean, at the end of the day, the Sharks are still a team that's got Thornton and Marleau and Pavelski and Couture. And in Pavelski and Couture's case, guys that don't choke in the playoffs. So you wonder if the Blues are going to be able to augment what is by far one of the best defensive teams we've seen come down the pike in years in the NHL with the proper amount of goal scoring that they're going to need to get past the first round series with San Jose. I'm picking the Blues. I don't feel good about it. One, because I picked the Sharks earlier this year, and if they lose, I look like an idiot. But I'm also I also don't feel good about it because there is that sort of disparity in experience.
Well, the guy who knows considerably less about hockey than either of you is about to make his big sleeper prediction for round one, and that's right. It's the San Jose Sharks. I somehow saw them three times in person this year, and I like the Sharks. I think they're a late bloomer. I thought you got to take something from the fact that, you know, they their butts were on the line the last four games. They came through in L.A., you know, knocked L.A. out three seed, then won again on Saturday. It seems to me like they have a lot of guys who have been there before, which we know in hockey matters. The goalie's pretty good. Like, why not? One of these teams, and I also saw the Blues in person, and as we said earlier with Bucci, like, I was watching them going, who are the good guys in this team? Sometimes I text Katie Biggs during the game, like, this guy, is this guy good? Like, and nobody in the Blues stood out to me, and it just seems like if there's an upset, this one feels like, to me, this could be the upset.
Yeah, it could, but I also think there's something to be said about the Blues as sort of like a cohesive unit. I mean, they've got a lot of players that have kind of come up together. They're not huge names, mainly because you need, in order to be a huge name, you usually have to have some playoff success or finish first in scoring or something like that. But they're a good cohesive team. And the other thing about them is that they dominated San Jose in the regular season. They just dominated them. They weren't even close.
Do you buy into that? Do you care about that? Do you think it matters?
I do from a strategic standpoint. When there's such a huge lopsided thing, and if nothing has changed all that much dynamically, like the Sharks didn't go out and land themselves some huge name at the deadline that's going to somehow invalidate the previous games against St. Louis. I've seen enough out of those games to know that St. Louis is doing something defensively that's monkeying with what the Sharks want to do. It's messing with their process a little bit. And the other thing about St. Louis is that they're healthy for the first time. Like they are a fully armed and operational battle station at this point, to the point where their chemistry has actually been messed up by it because they've had to fit all these guys back into the lineup that have been out. San Jose, meanwhile, has been scratching and clawing to make the playoffs with a veteran team. So I almost feel like there's going to be a difference in energy level when you got the Sharks, when you got the Blues that have had this thing wrapped up for a bit playing at home, and the Sharks having to fly across the country to St. Louis after coming down to the wire just to make the cut.
I like this. All of this sounds very logical, and that makes me like my Sharks pick even more. Because you know hockey's not logical. It's not. There's going to be weird stuff that happens every round. The other Western series, so the Canucks are the biggest favorite, minus 225 against the Kings. Blues are minus 165 over the Sharks. Blackhawks are minus 130 over the Coyotes, so they're a slight favorite. And then Predators, Red Wings, dead even.
Yeah.
Vegas has no idea. They're saying you take it. We don't know.
Yeah.
I want the Coyotes to win, by the way, that series.
Why? The Blackhawks are so much more fun.
Because Shane Doan, good guy.
Yeah.
Whitney.
I actually think that they've been a pesky playoff team for a few years, and the goaltending that they're going to get on Mike Smith will probably be enough to potentially get them past the first round. I picked Chicago in that series. One, because I'm entertained by them, and at the end of the day, you know, the old adage is there cheering in the press box is the question I always get, and I tell them absolutely there's cheering in the press box because we're all cheering for the best story,
yeah,
or the best outcome that's going to allow us to get time off or things of that nature. And in Chicago's case, I think Chicago advancing into the next round to me is so much more interesting in the sense that they'll probably play Vancouver. And then we get to see Roberto wet himself again.
That's a good point.
Yeah, exactly. So
maybe I've changed my mind already.
Yeah.
what's going to happen with Jonathan Toews? Is he what do we know and what don't we know about that?
Well, we know he had a concussion, and we know that he's had trouble getting back, and he thinks he's going to be back. And the team has kind of said, much like the Capitals said with Nick Backstrom, that it's sort of up to Toews to come back. So it sounds like he'll be back, which is one of the reasons why I picked him, because I think getting him back in the lineup, even if he's not 100%, is such a kick in the rear for them that I feel like it's going to energize him a little bit. So I don't feel confident about the pick because I think that Mike Smith could be one of these goalies that goes on a run. He's been so good, and lately he's been ridiculously good. Just I think he had three shutouts in maybe his last six or seven games. So I'm not confident about the pick. It's a pick that I've made for my own edification, really, for my own entertainment value, and mainly because I find it a Chicago-Vancouver series so much more compelling than like the Coyotes and the Blues, let's say.
Butchergrass liked the Predators and picked them to make the finals. Do you buy that one?
I buy it, but I'm not buying it, and for one reason, which is that I'm a sucker for old people, and I'm also a sucker for teams that feel like they've been overlooked and snubbed.
Whoa! That's the Phoenix Coyotes, first of all. But continue.
Yeah, no, that's true. but in this series, it's like the Predators are the new hotness, and Detroit's old and busted. And I remember at the beginning of the season thinking, boy, it's going to be really cool to see how the hockey world rallies around Detroit as their window of opportunity starts closing because Lidstrom's this old and Holmstrom's in his last year and everybody else is getting older. And it's almost like everything of that nature has been pushed to the sidelines in favor of this meme of, well, here are the Nashville Predators. They broke their maiden last year and won a playoff series. And now they've been loading up for a cup run, and here they are, and they will vanquish the Red Wings. The comparison I made on our podcast today was, it's like when Bret Hart wrestled Shawn Michaels, and you had to have the champ lie down for the new kid. And I think that's what people see here is, I don't know if it's going to be a Montreal screw job, but you're seeing, like, I think people thinking that it's going to be a torch-passing moment where this crazy good defensive team in Nashville moves on, and Detroit is sort of like pushed to the wayside to let the new era of playoff contenders pass through.
You know, what you just described happens at least once a year in the NBA playoffs, and in fact happened last year with Oklahoma City and Dallas, where mm-hmm. everybody was just ready to give the torch to Oklahoma City, and then the old guys from Dallas won. And actually, I'm hoping this year with the Celtics that might happen in a Celtics-Bulls series, if it's Celtics-Bulls round two.
Yeah, and I just don't trust it. I mean, it's the reason I'm picking Detroit is that the idea of these guys going into a series where they're the underdog, and Mike Babcock, who I think is the best coach in hockey, going into a series where he's an underdog. I mean, this is a guy with a master's, I think, in sports psychology, and you're going to allow him to come into a series where there's less pressure on this team than there is on a team in Nashville is a remarkable little case study. For me. But, it's funny. In some ways, both of their windows of opportunity are closing. In Detroit's case, it's because they're getting older, because guys are going to start retiring at some point. In Nashville's case, because their two best players, Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, are both headed to varying degrees of free agency. And so the immediacy is, win now with those guys, or else maybe see at least one of them leave.
Yeah, and who knows, same with Radulov to an extent, whether he'll want to come back or whether he'll test the market or whether his ability to come to the United States in the first place is contingent on him signing a deal with the devil to go back to Russia for eternity after this.
And that's one of the reasons I'm kind of like silently hoping that they do win Nashville, because the idea of them kind of not stashing away Radulov, that's not the right term, but having Radulov over in Russia and then bringing him back here and then really kind of pissing off the rest of the GMs in the Western Conference in doing so, there's something beautiful about that. There's something beautiful about the way that their GM, Dave Poile, played that whole situation, and something beautiful about the way that he's been able to kind of build this roster in a non-traditional market. Like, there's a lot of reasons to hope that Nashville wins. I just feel like the old assassins are going to come in and take him out maybe in seven games. But that might just be me getting blinded by nostalgia.
All right, so who do you have now as your Stanley Cup pick?
The final I have is Pittsburgh out of the East, which, as you might remember, Bill, was my original pick.
Yeah.
I'm looking like a big old smarty pants there.
Yeah.
And then coming out of the West, I'm going to cast my lot with the St. Louis Blues. I mean,
Ooh.
Granted, they do not have the Simmons seal of approval.
No,
I think
they do not.
That way, I'm screwing myself. But I like a good, stout defensive team, and I like some of the guys they have up front. I think they're gamers, and I just feel like maybe the enthusiasm in that town will carry them through. And I'm also hoping that at some point Vancouver gets knocked off, so maybe that makes the path to the Cup a little bit easier. And then once they get there, they'll just get smoked by Sid. I mean, they'll just lose in like three games if that's possible under the CBA.
You guys both seem to be just writing Sid in through these entire playoffs when he just played 22 games and can get checked once and he's out for the playoffs.
Yeah, but even if he gets checked once, that's still a team that won like 9 or 10 in a row when he got back.
I mean,
they're just a damn good hockey team, and him being back just makes them all that much better. And you're right. I mean, the dynamics of their journey to the Eastern Conference Championship, such as it is, could change dramatically with one hit. And the dynamics of a series could change dramatically with one hit. I mean, geez, the Stanley Cup final last year would have been completely different if Aaron Rome didn't take out Nathan Horton.
Yes.
So, with that in mind, I mean, there are some obstacles in their way, and I agree with you that I think that people even overlooking the series against the Flyers, is sort of foolhardy in handing the conference over to the Penguins the way some people are. But I just think that from start to finish, when they were healthy, they were going to be the best team in the East. And it's one of the reasons why I think Vegas has responded the way it has to them. I mean, I just think that's the best team in the East, even though they're the four seed.
What's scary about Pittsburgh is that I feel like they never have everyone. Someone's always out, whether it's Letang or Sid or Staal, and they keep winning, and it's kind of scary. Voltron when they're all back together.
Yes, all of the lions together forming a perfect robotic monster that's able to take out dinosaurs from other planets. I agree with you, Katie. I think your assessment is spot on. The thing also about Pittsburgh is that if they do have a flaw, no one's allowed to speak about it, or else you get a fine from the National Hockey League. So, I mean, that's also a pretty impressive thing about the team.
All right, let's go quick quiz just for the casual fans listening. Best player not named Sidney Crosby in the playoffs. Katie, you go first.
I gotta go with his teammate. I gotta go with Evgeny Malkin, yeah.
What do you think, Wish?
Yeah, I think I'd go Malkin too, but with a nod towards the season that Claude Giroux's had for Philly. He's been ridiculously good. And if you're including goalies, as much as I respect that gorgeous Swede between the pipes for the New York Rangers, Jonathan Quick's been the best goalie in the league this year for LA, without question. He's not had the same help that Lundqvist has had. He's done more with less, and he's the only reason why the Kings aren't watching the draft lottery tonight.
Goalie you trust the most in the playoffs, which you can go first.
Marc-Andre Fleury of the Penguins. He hasn't played well coming in, but like you can count on one hand the number of guys that you could talk about being money goalies in this league, and he's money. He's got a ring. He backs it up. He never gets the credit he deserves, but if I need to win a playoff game, I want Fleury between the pipes.
Katie?
It's a good answer, but I'm going to be a homer and
go with
30 Rock.
Yes.
And by the way, credit to NHL.com's Dave Lozo, of course, for coining that nickname.
Brian Gumbel is very happy you chose that. best old reliable warrior in the playoffs. Has to be at least, I'm going to say, 32 years old. Grizzled vet. Probably has facial hair already. Katie? You want to go second? Or pass this off?
Yeah, Wish go first.
He'll pass. He'll pass on this $3,000.
I'm still thinking.
I will take Thomas Holmstrom of the Detroit Red Wings. I don't know how reliable he is because he's not very swift of foot. His numbers have certainly declined. But the idea of the Red Wings being able to deploy a player with such a large backside that it actually has its own gravity in front of an opposing goaltender is such an impressive thing. And to the point where you will see penalties called, not because Holmstrom bumped the goaltender, but because the goaltender was actually drawn to his backside by that gravity during a certain play during the power play. It's amazing.
While I want to go with Ray Whitney, I'm going to say Zdeno Chara.
Huh. Thank you.
You're
Appreciate
welcome.
That.
Hey, I have a quick question. How
Come on,
short?
I'm not done with word association yet.
Okay, let's do that first.
No, do your quick question.
I just want to know how short Luongo's leash is going to be.
Oh.
Like down 3-0 and, you know, late in the first, does he get pulled? Then once pulled, does he ever go back in?
See, it's an interesting question, and I think that it's applicable to later rounds, because unfortunately for the Kings, they don't play in Boston or Chicago, so Luongo should be pretty good against them. But when you get to a series against Chicago, like let's say in the second round, I think the cool thing about the Canucks this year is that I no longer feel like they're beholden to Luongo. I think the politics are out the window. Last year, they had to stick with him. He's the franchise guy. They owed him something. Now I feel like it's cool with the media. And it's cool with the fans if they turn the reins over to Corey Schneider now. I really do. I think they can do it without incident. It's like It reminds me back in Katie, will, and I don't even remember this on the podcast. It reminds me back in New York when you had the Van Biesburg-Richter thing, and you had the different fan bases kind of split up between the two. And it was also reminiscent to me of the Mark Jackson-Rod Strickland 1-2 punch with the Knicks, where you had people like, okay, it's time to turn the reins over to this other guy.
Best defenseman in the playoffs right now. When you trust the most. You can go first, Wish.
The one I trust the most is Chara. Best defenseman is probably Shea Weber. I voted for him to win the Norris this year over Carlson with Ottawa because Carlson didn't really play defense all that much and doesn't play on the penalty kill. And to me, Weber's had the better season. But Chara is the guy that I trust. I mean, if you need to deploy somebody to shut down someone else, it's going to be Zdeno Chara. Also because of his Leonidas beard. I mean, his Leonidas beard. Actually, both guys, Weber and Chara, have ridiculous beards. But the image of Chara with the cup over his head, screaming and detaching his jaw like a xenomorph from a Ridley Scott film was really impressive.
Katie?
Yeah, I mean, I set him as my grizzled vet, so he's my D-man, too.
Best fighter in the playoffs who's not a goon?
Oh, that's an easy one for me. And no, I am not sucking up to the host. Milan Lucic. Luch is such a beast. And
you should see Bill's smile, by the way. When
so
I said
happy.
Chara and you said Lucic, it's equivalent to my Chris Kreider.
Lucic is such a fantastic fighter and such an intimidating force. And what you're seeing now with Boston, because they won last year and because of what they've been able to do to teams this year, specifically the Buffalo Sabres, is they've set the mold now. And if you listen to Brian Burke's press conference today up in Toronto about the Maple Leafs, it basically could be boiled down to one thing. We want to be the Bruins, which is easier said than done, and more than ironic considering when Brian Burke was the GM of the Ducks and they won the Cup, everybody tried to knuckle up and be like the Ducks, and they found out, oh, we don't have the same kind of caliber of players that they do, so we're going to fall short. So it's sort of weird to hear someone trying to ape the Bruins with the knowledge that you can't just go out and find a Milan Lucic who can score 30 goals and knock someone out with one punch. It just doesn't happen.
That was one of the best moments of the season when he ran at the Buffalo goalie and it was like a big deal, and then they played in Buffalo, I forget how many days later, and Buffalo had to send the obligatory guy to try to kick his ass. And Lucic just killed them. And it was like, all right, thanks for sending that guy. Anybody else? Anybody else want to try me today? No.
It was a defining moment of Buffalo's season. They lost they lost everything on that play. Their identity, their will to compete. It was the single most humbling thing I've seen in a long time.
I will say I saw every team in person this year who's good except for the Rangers. Because did they even come to Los Angeles this year? I don't think they did.
I don't think they did.
The Bruins.
I was hoping it was because they weren't good.
They played them like in, they might have played them overseas.
Whatever. But the Bruins were so physical in person. I do feel like the East is a little more physical than the West in general. I don't know if you guys agree with that. But the Bruins came in and just, like, you actually kind of felt a little bit bad for the Kings. Like, it took them like a period just to figure out how to handle what was going on, and then they rallied back. But it's such a big, physical, bruising team. It's everything like that the city of Boston just would want in a Bruins team, I feel like.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm based out of Washington, D.C., so I just found out there is a Western Conference. So, I mean, I hear the teams are pretty tough out there, but I haven't actually seen any of them.
Yeah.
My fighter who's not a goon, who I'm interested to see how his role is in the playoffs, is Philadelphia Flyers Wayne Simmons.
There you go.
Yep.
Good choice.
He's good. The Kings fans miss him.
Yeah.
This is a very important question. And I'm going to say you don't have to say Brad Marchand. Best pest in the playoffs. Marchand off the table.
Marchand off the table, and I think he should be off the table because he's on notice. I mean, you know, the Brendan Shanahan came down, gave him that suspension for the hit on Salo, and I think that was a wake-up call that he's not going to be able to low-bridge anybody in these playoffs. He's not going to be able to lay on a Swedish twin and just punch him in the face. I think he's on notice. So with that said... with that said, the best pest left is... I mean, if you're going to talk about a pest, then you obviously have to go to where the pest live, the hive of the pest, the Vancouver Canucks. And I'll take Max LaPierre for this. The sheer fact that that man, I'm pretty sure, would do anything. He's the only player in the NHL that I think would actually at some point take a foreign object out. Be it a hammer, be it brass knucks, be it something out of his hockey pants, and just go to town on someone, and then hide it quickly, throw it into the crowd like a heelish wrestler would.
I love those. It's one of my favorite things about hockey versus basketball is the pest. Basketball, you're not really allowed to have pests because of all the rules and the ways. Katie, who's yours?
Well, I'm just thinking about how annoying it must be to play Scott Hartnell. Those smiles and the hemp necklace and the hair, and he would drive me nuts.
Yeah, it's like getting barked at by Chewbacca for 60 minutes. It's a real pain.
Or someone at a Dave Matthews concert.
The Kings have a guy named Lewis who I don't feel like is a pest. I don't feel like he does this stuff intentionally, but for whatever reason, every team like tries to beat him up and takes runs at him, and it's almost like you don't know what he did. Like, is there some sort of inside story that only people in the league know? But I always wonder when there's like that one player on teams that everybody takes a run at.
The real interesting thing for me with the Kings as far as pests is Mike Richards. I mean, Mike Richards is going to go into Vancouver. It's like he's going to be with his own kind, not only because there's pests there, but because there's a thriving nightlife. I'm going to find that matchup intriguing if they match him up against the Sedin line, because it could be a real, he used to go to war with Sidney Crosby back in the Eastern Conference, and I imagine it'll be the same thing in the playoffs here.
Which story? Here's my quick answer. Which storyline never gets less funny? The Mike Richards dry island or the Dustin Penner just being Dustin Penner?
Well, I mean, the Dustin Penner thing now has a touch of melancholy because the woman who made him his pancakes is no longer his woman.
It's true.
So, I mean, there is that. I will tell you the most overplayed storyline as far as comedy goes has to now be the Tim Thomas Obama thing.
Yeah.
One, because it's completely misguided. His beef was with the government and not necessarily with Barack Obama. And B, because every single person within the Washington, D.C. area, maybe on the entire Eastern Seaboard, has made the Obama should show up and sit behind Thomas and blah, 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 blah for Game 3 joke, which is unfortunate.
He better not do that.
Who, Obama, of course.
Yeah, he can't be on my podcast next year if he does that.
There is a certain irony, though, to the idea that you know, Obama hasn't attended a Washington Capitals game during his entire presidency, and then he'd show up to see the guy who wouldn't show up to see him. Mm. I mean, from a storyline perspective, it's kind of fun, but from a hackneyed joke perspective, I think it's kind of lost its luster.
I think it would be tough for him to go to a hockey game.
Think so? Why?
Well, in basketball, at least, like, he can sit courtside, and you can basically be protected, buffered. I don't know where you'd sit if you were Obama in a hockey game.
Like, there's going to be put him between the benches with Pierre Maguire. That way Pierre can watch out for him. They can have chats. He can teach him the game and what's going on. Tell him where all the players played their junior hockey. I think that's the obvious place, really, for Obama if he went to a game.
Yeah. I was just about to say, Pierre will tell us, you know, Obama's elementary school teacher's name.
And on that note, we're letting you go because I know you're writing. How many words do you think you'll write during the playoffs?
Oh my God,
250,000.
It might be pushing 250,000 for sure. It's fun though, man. Like it's the best time of year, and I'm Puck Daddy. I mean, we'll do the chats for every game 7. We'll have coverage throughout every day, throughout the weekend. It's just going to be cool. And the other cool part is that, like, because of the way that we do the blog, it's not simply just watching the games, the analysis. One of the single most popular stories we've ever done was out of the playoffs last year, where a Tampa Bay Lightning fan fought against its homeowners association to put a lawn sign up to support the team, and then found some tricky way. He pretended the lawn sign was for a local security company that didn't exist, and that's how he got around the HOA rules. So it's like the little stories like that on Puck Daddy that really, I think, are what make the playoffs like a different animal and really special for us.
Well, thanks for everything you do. Between your blog and Katie's column, it was a lot easier to get back into this regular season, which I really enjoyed. So thanks. And we will check in with you during the playoffs.
Well, thank you, Bill, and thank you, Katie.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
All right. Last but not least, it's not often that a Washington team and a Boston team get to play in a playoff series. In fact, I'm not sure it's happened since, like, when was last time the House? How's your line? What's happening? You're with Katie Bakes and myself.
Katie Bakes!
Hello! Yeah.
When was the last time a Washington team played a Boston team? I mean, it's really one of the worst city rivalries in sports.
It's probably Bullets-Celtics in that Jeff Malone era.
Oh, yeah. Bakes points out, in 98, the Caps beat the Bruins 4-2.
Yeah,
which
that's right.
I think was like it was early Joe Thornton. The Bruins like kind of wanted the Boston was like trying to pretend to be back in the Bruins, but it never really took on.
Well, that was the year that the Caps made the Cup.
No, would you make it 98 or 96?
No, we made it in 98.
Oh, well, there you go. So we lost to the eventual Cup representatives. And then there was like a Celtics Bullets in 1982, I'm going to say.
That's what I was jumping on. I was going all the way back
Frank
there.
Johnson and Gerald Henderson got in a fight. That was fun. You're a Caps pseudo season ticket holder, or you share.
But that's pseudo. They have my money.
But you share them, though. You're like me with the Clippers. You go to half of them, right?
Yeah, some number. Not quite half.
At what point did they make you buy the playoff tickets? Was it during some horrible, after like three losses in a row or something like that?
It was after game one. It was in October.
How you feeling? You haven't been crazy about this Caps team.
Well, I feel as kind of measured and cautious as I've ever felt about a Caps team. The previous 4 years have been all, irrational exuberance and excitement. We've come in hot, leading the league, scoring the most goals every year, leading the league in points, in wins and the whole thing. And the expectations have been completely unfettered this year. No expectations. They went through a coaching change. They went through serious injuries to two key guys. And, they've attempted to transform their playing style into something that looks to an uninformed observer like me, like kind of playoff hockey, as opposed to the high-flying, goal-scoring, offensive juggernaut they were the previous years. But who knows how it'll translate when things get going on Thursday.
Plus, you lost Bruce f***ing Boudreaux.
I know.
He f***ing left.
The best f***ing coach, Bruce f***ing Boudreaux. Love that f***ing guy.
He's going to bring Anaheim back to glory.
The way you described the Caps, you almost sounded like it was like a girl in college who kept falling for guys, and then they kept burning, and then by junior year didn't totally trust guys anymore, but that's when they fell in love.
Well,
maybe that'll
totally
be the Caps for
the Caps.
You.
What do you want me to do? They're hot. They look so good the past four years.
Mm.
They talk nice to me. They made me feel good about myself.
Well, if it's any consolation, Katie Bakes, Rangers fan, did not want to see the Caps in round one, was relieved when the Bruins drew the Caps.
So that's the nice position that we're in this year. It's kind of exciting for once to be kind of the mysterious underdog, the team that nobody wants to play. The curious thing is we have a head coach who's never coached a playoff game, and we have a starting goalie who's never played in the playoff game either.
Ooh.
So
and when he had like seven games this season, I think.
Who, Holtby?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he played some last year also. He's played in the NHL before, and he's been pretty good, but who knows?
Yeah. We had Puck Daddy on before you, and he was surmising that there's a big internet joke that he's already tired of about Obama showing up for game three and sitting right behind Tim Thomas.
I love it. I think it's great.
I kind of like it, too. Obama, it's an election year. That would be kind of a funny election move by him.
Well, I hope that there are 15,000 Obama masks in the stands at a minimum. If Obama can't make it, I hope, 15, 18, 20,000 people show up in masks.
Mm. And you're happy with Al Ovechkin's plan, right?
Yeah, I mean, he did what he had to do, which is put the team on his back the last 15 games and get them into the playoffs. I mean, it's still kind of an open question what happened during the regular season with him, between kind of what looked to be attitude issues and maybe fitness issues. But he sure as hell put them on their back when it got down to crunch time here.
There were enough issues that you were convinced that he was throwing games because of the Russian mafia. I remember you emailed me that over and over again. You're very concerned about this.
Well, the Prokhorov is right up 95, Interstate 95 here. I mean, it's not a long ride. Prokhorov sends his boys. He could send his boys down here.
All right, so are we going to taunt each other during this series? How do you want to play this?
Yeah, I mean, we could probably do some emailing, some taunting. I definitely want to get a wager going.
Should we? Well,
you have to give me some odds, though.
I'm glad you brought this up.
I'll give you one hot dog for every three you give me.
The Bruins are -220 favorites, and the Caps are 2-1 underdogs. So it's basically 2-1.
Yeah, 2-1. So that's two steaks for me and one for you.
Well, that's it. So when we go out to dinner, you eat twice as much as me. So maybe that'll just be the dinner.
That's kind of the natural thing anyway.
Yeah. All right. So we'll just bet dinner, which evens out because you eat twice as much food as I do.
Perfect.
All right. Say bye to Katie Bakes.
Bye, Katie Bakes.
Thanks, Katie Bakes.
You're welcome.
When'd you
call
him?
Katie Bakes.
Should be up tomorrow.
All right.
Or I guess when is it today?
Wednesday. Yeah. All right. We'll check out your call.
Yeah.
Thank you. Co-hosting.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.